This is a compilation of the oral history tapes on the Sydney Harbour Bridge maintenance cranes before their replacement in 1997. The original interviews and the compilation were commissioned by the Roads and Traffic Authority of New South Wales, the RTA, and were recorded and edited by myself, Richard Rexworthy, historian. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the RTA. Sound effects were taken from the RTA video on the operation of the cranes by Walker Clancy in 1997. Studio and technical assistance was by Radio 2SERFM and Michael Jones. The Sydney Harbour Bridge, including the main arch and approach spans, was built by Dorman Long Limited of Middlesbrough, England, mainly with Australian labour, under contract to the Public Works Department of New South Wales, who built the approaches themselves. The arch was built of silicon steel in two halves, held back by 128 cables a side in U-shaped tunnels. Between 1929 and 1931, the two huge creeper cranes which lifted the steel of the arch moved out, laying their own tracks across the sky. Behind them moved the maintenance cranes. At first they were used by the riveting and painting gangs, until they had to be dismantled to let the creeper cranes pass and be removed in pieces near the pylon. The four maintenance cranes were then re-erected on the arch and have therefore been in use for a total of 68 years. All the cranes were designed and manufactured by Smith, Wellman and Owen of England and were assembled in Sydney by Dorman Long. The story of the use of those maintenance cranes is told by the men who used them. The first is the former work supervisor Don Willey, who started on the bridge as a painter in 1965.
I came to the Harbour Bridge on the 5th of the 5th, 1965. So that's 32 years.
And when you first came here, who was the engineer?
The engineer was Ted Fairfield, and the paint foreman was John Sales, and the lead and hand painter was Bob Miller.
And what about the leading hand and the rigging?
Yeah, Doug Churchwood was the leading hand rigger, and he also used to look after the ironworkers too. So he used to look after the both groups.
Who were the crane drivers when you first started, can you remember?
I started on the south side, and the crane driver on the south side was Jack Ash.
And what about the process of actually moving the crane? Can you remember how that was done?
Yeah, it moves up on a chain, it's a creeper crane, and it moves for three bays. And then once it's to the end of the chain, we've got to pull the chain through, and it's a very long operation. It's very, very, very slow.
Exactly how do you pull the chain through? By hand?
Yeah, by the use of the gypsy on the crane, and also we use the air winches to pull the chain through. It takes about 12 men to move the crane.
Archie Wotherspoon, maintenance crane driver on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, was a Scottish-born carpenter and joiner before he came to Australia. He worked at Cockatoo Dockyard as an ironworker before coming to the bridge in 1970. He soon started his training in crane driving.
Started training as a crane driver, I think it was late 1970 or 71, and I was trained for 6 weeks, then put me through for my ticket, and I got the ticket, and I was a relief crane driver then.
And who was the crane driver before you that sort of trained you?
The one that trained me was Jack Ash, so he actually put me through his training schedule.
I asked Archie Wotherspoon about the operation of the cranes. What kept them on track and what were the problems?
When the crane went over the top of one of the laterals in this sort of situation,
yeah.
How was it clamped on?
It's not clamped on at all. Like, you've got down the side here a kick roller, which is a guide roller. To get over the top of the lateral, you had to lift these kick rollers up to allow you to traverse over the top of it. The only thing that the crane wanted to drift, well, you've got another small guide roller underneath the crane itself, which ran along an angle, which straddled two diagonal laterals and a straight lateral.
Now, what about problems with the crane generally?
The worst of the four cranes, in my experience, and I think any other crane driver that's driven any of them for any length of time would give the same, was the southwestern crane. It was had a mind of its own. Like when it was travelling up and down the arch, you could set it up to run exactly as you wanted it, and it'd work all right for half a day, and you got there after lunch and you'd have to reset it because it used to crab a lot, you know. It was a swine of a thing to operate. It wasn't any more difficult in operation, but to pay more attention to it, it just seemed to move about a lot more than the other three cranes. But that was just one of the quirks of the crane. But there was no real problems. We never had any real, an occasional electrical fault or something like that, you know. Once one of the kick rollers had to be taken down on the southeastern crane. And
Joe Twigg was born at Pyrmont in Sydney and worked as a rigger at CSR before he started on the bridge, where he became a crane chaser. I asked him about any changes to the crane since 1932.
I've got a photograph there. How has that changed since that was taken in 1932?
Well, all the gears are covered. This is a luffing crane by the look of it, meaning that the jibs carry up and go out like this. The stages are the same. They've got four wires holding the, like a cradle, the four together. They're right. These days you get four wires on it, so if one breaks through, he's got to be able to hang on to what it's lifting. But I remember because I had to change these wires over. See, it was one wire going right through to the four. Mm. That's another change. This is a proper cabin going right along the top here now, like this. All this was covered here. All that was covered there, what I can see. You couldn't see out the back because it was completely covered. The blokes wasn't there. The blokes are not here now, I mean.
I think he died in 1972. That's Frank Litchfield.
Yeah, I've heard of him. Yes, I've heard of him. It's all open now. This is all open, what I see now.
Yes, on the photograph, yeah. Well, I believe they put the covers over afterwards.
Yes.
In 1932.
Yeah, that's right. Well, all these motors are covered. And everything's inside now, like all these motors here, except the jibbing, the jib cranes and the actual lifting wires and that. They come in, they're all undercover now. They cover them all up here. But these were never inside, you know.
Now, what about, as you said, there was a luffing crane there. Now, what's it like now?
Well, now, instead of having a luffing gear on that, they've bolted and welded a bar down to the top of the cabin on heavy gear here, both sides, and that keeps the crane in the same position all the time, which means you don't have to come backwards and forwards all the time, because in the old days, they had a lot of trouble with that. Mm. We have a lot of trouble with it because when we're coming up, and the wind blows, the stages go underneath the cords and very hard to get out because we haven't got the luffing crane to do it. Right. This here is still there. There's a big bolt in the front there, and we put a bar through it, and that gives us a level as you come down the thing with the crane like this from top to bottom. This is your leveller. And, that's very heavy.
It's a bottle screw.
A bottle screw, that's it.
I asked Joe Twigg about the job of crane chasing.
Now, my part in it is, when they're going free-falling, I call it, down like that, I've got to look out the crane on this side to make sure they're doing it, and the driver looks out that side. Now, if I see a rope getting caught or something like that, I've got a button up top here I press straight away, and it automatically stops everything, and they go, what's wrong? And I tell them, because we've got a phone up in the crane, and we can converse with them straight away. Now, this is only if they're going to the side, see, if they haven't got far to go. Now, if they've got to go a long way down, because he's a bellman, I get on the stage and I manoeuvre with him all the way down. So, because when I get down below, I might have to, the stages go down like that on the sides of the steel, like say, both sides, there's one there, one there. They go down like this, and I might have to put the stages that way, so that the two join. As they're going down like that, I got to get the stages and join them that way, bolt them together. And you got an angle coming up here and it holds them in a bit more. It's harder. That's where I was saying where the luffing comes in. When the luffing comes in, they carry them dead square. But when you haven't got that luffing, they're stuck to the one place, so that when you go down, they're sort of pulling into each other. And I've got to go down and I set them up that way, and then we've got to set them up this way. Depends on what they're doing, the actual size. Now, when we go down to do this part, we've got to put a 16-foot catwalk from that stage to that side and bolt it in, both sides, and pin it in. And then we've got these handrails, safety rails going across. And I've got to give them the hose to give them the air to work with. And then I've got to stay down underneath while they go up to the top and do their job. They've got to start at the top, but I've got to be down the bottom to pick up the gear because there's no place up there you can hang the gear. So I take it from down below and I do everything down below. And they help me. Now, to get paint, we've got a special thing to come up to give them all the paint on the cranes. Sometimes a crane will go down with the right distance from the crane, the legal height from the railway. And I pull the gear up onto these stages, and if we've got X amount of cans, like say 20 cans, well, I put 10 each side to keep the level, so you don't have 15 on that and 10 on that sort of, or 10 on each, 12 and 10 on there, like. And then we take them up the top and put it where they are. But there's a heck of a lot in this. When that crane moves back, we've got two cables. We've got a big cable, 450 volts at the back, and we've got a telephone cable. That gives us to the office down there or anywhere on the job, except the outside, and we can converse with the boss or any and tell him that something's wrong, the electricity's gone, there's a bloke being hurt, you know what I mean? Safety first. We've got that. Now, my job, before these blokes can move into position, I've got to come up here and make sure that you've got to hang onto the cable and make sure the cable doesn't go underneath while we're going backwards.
Sam Brazis was born in Italy and was a baker. In Australia, he became a rigger at CSR and at the gasworks at Mortlake. He joined the Harbour Bridge as a rigger for 18 months before being trained as a crane driver, which he continued with until his retirement in 1989. Sam remembered the crane driver Jock Robinson, who trained him and had worked on the building of the bridge.
Did he tell you any stories?
Oh, well, I mean, I'll tell you one thing, and whatever he said, and I'm sure it was true, because the day he left, I was driving the South-East Crane. No, South-West Crane. Mm-hmm. South-East, I beg your pardon, yes. South-East Crane, and I was right over the top on the centre, and he was on the other side, and he crossed through the letters like a 2-year-old kid. Yeah, marvellous. I really was pleased to see that he still had it on him.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Sam remembered seeing memorable things during his years as a Sydney Harbour Bridge crane driver. The Opera House growing and the view of the airport disappearing.
I'll never forget when they were building the Opera House. A team come up, and one of them was a doctor. He said, "You come up here every day?" "Yes." He said, "Do you realise that you come up here once, and you do the exercise for the whole week? It doesn't work with me," I said, "because I come up here 2 or 3 times a day." And I don't know, he said, "You can have it." Yeah. Yes, yes. Now, I saw the whole city grow up. I was very, very fortunate over that. When I started here, only the IWA tail was the yardstick of the city. And I saw right round in there. Our house come down, beautiful house come down, and so-called modern building coming up, and that's it, yes. I was very lucky. When I started here, you can see, from the top, you can see easy plane landing and take off. When I left here, you couldn't see anything anymore. Pity, in between the pollution in the building and there. Yes, it was a good experience.
Jim Henman, mechanical engineer, was rotated to take charge of the Harbour Bridge for a number of years. He spoke of the maintenance problems with the cranes.
Apart from the odd breakdown, mainly electrical things, we broke a gear in one and had to get a gear made. I can remember that.
What sort of gear?
Was one of the drive gears for one of the winches, but it wasn't a very bad one. It was easy enough to get it made. I think, I can't remember who made the gear now at the time, but I guess we were lucky. We've got to remember this was early 1970 and there were still some good places around being able to make those things like David Brown and those gearbox people. It's a bit harder today.
What about the gypsies? Any problems with that?
Not during my time. The maintenance of them was something that had to be kept up. Replacing ropes, making sure that the ropes were exact and correct at all times, and that all the pulleys were checked, that there was no cracks in them, and that all those things were right. Yeah.
What about the electrical motors? Any problems with them?
Milton Hayden had those under his control, the electrical man, and I can't remember that we had any problems at that stage.
Electrician Milton Hayden served his apprenticeship on the railways and was transferred to the Harbour Bridge in 1953 when the RTA took over responsibility for the electrical service other than railway overhead wiring. He became general foreman or work supervisor on the bridge in 1964 and was awarded the British Empire Medal in 1975. He spoke about the electrical side of the cranes and was recorded over the telephone, and so the legal recording beep is heard.
There's one thing I particularly wanted to ask you, the cranes, the electric motors.
Yes.
Were they all original?
Yes.
And what sort of maintenance did they get?
Well, they were regularly maintained. I've seen sometimes the motors were taken out and the bearings replaced and they were cleaned and that sort of thing. But there was not a lot of on them, but there was continual by fitters and electricians over the years. But they were still original. There were no replacements.
And what sort of motors were they? They had brushes and that sort of thing?
No, they were what they call squirrel cage.
Yeah, it was proper squirrel cage motors. No,
motors and slip ring motors.
How many motors were per crane?
Only the two.
Yes.
One was for the hoisting and the other was for the traversing.
Milton Hayden remembered comedian Paul Hogan, who was a rigger and crane driver on the bridge for a number of years.
What about stories about people? Have you got any stories about crane drivers?
Paul Hogan became a crane driver, but not many people knew about that. He was a rigger, of course.
Any stories about him?
Oh, no, he did his job. He was okay. He was a union organiser and he did part of organised work. And then he finally left us and took it up full time, and then he took up his comedian role. He was a rigger. He came. I was the general foreman there for 9 years, from 1964. I had a dual role, as foreman electrician and general foreman there, one period from 1964 on, and then.
What, till you left? Till 85?
No, only for 9 years.
1964 to 1973, is that it?
It was 11 years, sorry, because they got a medal.
All right.
They gave me the British Empire Medal in 1975, that's right. But then I took over outside works as well as the Harbour Bridge. I took over Carl Expressway Tunnel and the Mascot Tunnel and the opening bridges and all the expressways and expressway lighting on the Warringah Freeway and all the bridges.
Martin Haley was the engineer in charge of Sydney Harbour Bridge from 1980 to 1983. He remembered an early proposal to replace the cranes and told of an accident.
Now, there was talk of replacing them, and I was involved in the design with the consultants, Maunsell and Partners, and we had agreed on a concept which was a bridge, a gantry that went from the east arch to the west arch, and the whole thing would have crept over the whole arch without having to do this temporary rigging that they have been doing since time immemorial. And we're in the process of doing that. We just priced it, and the RCA threw its hands in the air and said, impossible, we can't afford that. And then there was an accident with the cranes. Now, you are obviously familiar with the cranes. There's an east and west stage on each crane. And these stages, the ends, they're all suspended from single wires. And the ends of the stage wound together, and they can be joined in various ways in order to give you access to all the areas of the braces and the arch and the verticals and so on. And they had two stages lowered on one crane, and they were joined by loose ropes to control the sway. And the winches on these, which raised and lowered these two stages, and it was a common shaft which drove both drums, so that if the winch launch one stage up and down independently, or they could winch them both simultaneously. And the two were joined, and they were locked in place, and just joined with these loose ropes. And somehow the dog clutch joined the drive and the brakes to these drums was knocked out, and the two stages ran away. The winch is actually freewheeled, and the two stages just dropped, went in. The driver up in the crane, they had two-way radio communication with him, but of course nobody was in any fit state to start yelling at him. He heard this clattering noise and couldn't understand what it was, and then finally realized what it was and leapt on the foot brake and pulled both the stages up after they dropped about 60 or 80 feet, I think, luckily above the railway conductors, and then discovered that the dog clutch, which joined it to the drive, had jumped out. This was controlled by a lever, and there was supposed to be a pin shoved through to retain the lever. All very crude, all very primitive, and somehow the pin had come out, the lever had just jumped out. Now, there was a great committee of inquiry, because we'd nearly killed four men. Two of them had suffered reasonably bad injuries, because as they ran away and the winches were freewheeling, one had gone faster than the other. It jerked on these loose ropes and tipped the other stage and nearly tipped the blokes out. In fact, throwing them around so badly that they had bruised ribs and whatever. So there was a lot of investigation into it. It was, you know, almost an air accident.
Estonian-born rigger and crane driver Oscar Tavel worked on the bridge from 1959 to 1982. He remembered working at night, crane driving for the railway maintenance gangs.
Did you often have to work at night?
Only when the work was done on the railway line, only then.
And that's not often?
No, it was a few years apart.
And dealing with the railway people, was that difficult or...?
Oh, no, because what they did, they just switched the electricity off, and then we were able to get near the high-tension wires.
And what about the job of the crane to lift things as well as the people?
Yes, well, when it was maintenance on the center pieces of the where the crane stages didn't reach, then there was one line was blocked off, usually line 8 was blocked off, and then one crane stage was lowered to the ground level, or the driveway level, and then material was loaded on and lifted up.
Jim Turnbull, ironworker and rigger, worked on the Sydney Harbour Bridge from 1965 until he had to leave with lead poisoning in 1989. His father was from Scotland and had worked on the building of the bridge. Jim remembered working on the maintenance of the cranes.
Did you work on the crane?
Yes, worked on the crane with a boilermaker named Gary Flood. Was in the 70s. We relined the southern western crane. We cut it all back to the original base frame, and then we built a new cabin on top of it. And then they took that up to the top of the arch, and that lay dormant for something like about 5 years.
What, the whole crane?
Yeah, so they had four cranes moving, and they didn't have the manpower to actually use the whole four cranes at the one time.
Roy Hill was a painter and work supervisor. He was there when Joe Twigg and Paul Hogan talked a potential suicide out of jumping, for which Hogan got an award. Roy Hill and engineer Brendan White set up a new safety code, which Roy describes.
Do the painters always go down with the stages when they go down?
All the time. You just climb over the side. The crane chaser we were discussing frees them from their ties, and away you go. All painters aboard.
Do they haul you up again for lunchtime?
Not necessarily. Just harbour somewhere where it's easy to get off and safe. Could be on the bottom cord or just underneath.
What about changes in the safety regulations during the time you were there?
Oh, most dramatic. There were hardly anything when I arrived there. It was just you looked after yourself. There were some guidelines, but very few. In actual fact, with the engineer at that time, who was Brendan White, he and I set up the personal safety and hygiene, which is the Bridge Act. not necessarily the act, but the safety system for the bridge.
Were you there when they put the new amenities under the hanging underneath the approach pads?
Yeah, that's when the safe system of work came in, the one on the north side, and then the one in the pylon on the south side, yes. I was much involved with that.
And what was the procedure when that was set up? You say you were much involved. How were you involved?
Well, having set up with the engineer this safe system of work, I then became the safety facilitator just to make sure that it happened and everyone followed the procedures for their betterment and the authorities. So it was a matter of guiding, questioning, asking, demanding.
Now what about the harnesses, safety harnesses, use of them? Some people still don't want to use them.
They're an encumbrance to the bridge people, the good bridge people who know their business. I dislike using them myself. They were always available, but very rarely used until, I suppose, these days. But they're a nuisance to work with. The bridge is rather unique in its design, and it doesn't allow for the use of them because there's not enough. How most of the time you're on top and you need a wire above you to make a harness work successfully. So you've got, in this case, you have to attach parallel with yourself. So it's not a real success. You'd hurt yourself more with a harness than without, unless you drop yourself completely.
I noticed when the bridge was being built that there was painters were on bosun's chairs all over the place. Does that happen anymore?
Not with the old bosun's chair as we knew it, which was on rope. The other foreman and work supervisor, her name was Alan Brown, and I myself designed what was a kid's play seat, you know, a plastic seat. And Brownie then being the boilermaker foreman and in charge of the fitters, he designed a frame that went in and took a motor. So we reversed the wire, the chain in the motor, and it became then a hauling device. So the block went up the top, was anchored, and you sat on the chair, turned the valve with the air, and away you went. Very, very safe.
That was a compilation of the oral history interviews on the old Sydney Harbour Bridge maintenance cranes, recorded and edited by myself, Richard Braxworthy, historian. The work was commissioned by the Roads and Traffic Authority of New South Wales, the RTA. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the RTA. Thanks to all those who took part. Don Willey, former work supervisor. Archie Wotherspoon, former crane driver. Joe Twigg, former crane chaser. Sam Brazis, former crane driver. Jim Henman, former bridge engineer. Milton Hayden, former electrician and work supervisor. Martin Haley, former bridge engineer. Oscar Tavell, former crane driver. Jim Turnbull, former rigger, and Roy Hill, former work supervisor.